This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 46, Cracker Jack 3.
Yes, Cracker Jack 3. You heard us talk about this a few podcasts ago, and we talked about it came from the bargain bin. This is when we went down to one of our local video emporiums, 2Q Video, and we just selected a whole bunch of films based on the box art and what we thought might be good to discuss on the podcast. And there was this one movie we picked up, and we looked at the box art, and we thought, interesting. So, Chris, would you care to describe the artwork for us?
Yeah, I guess so. We've got top billing given to Olivier Grunet, who is a
French
kickboxing
champion.
Yeah. And so, you know, it says one last time, one last chance. Jack is back.
So obviously,
you figure Olivier Grunet is Jack, but he's not Jack. And he's got like a scope, like a rifle scope in between his eyes. So we think he's going to be like someone who somebody wants dead. And we think he's going to be wielding weaponry and shooting lots of people and kicking butt.
Well, he's holding a gun right in the cover there.
Yeah, not only in this movie does he not shoot a gun, he's not Jack. So this billing is really weird. Jack is actually B-movie legend Bo Svenson.
A very aged, grizzled Bo Svenson. Yeah.
And so we were, you know, misled by this bargain basement find. But
yeah, but what is hilarious, though, is that as pathetic as the box cover is, there's more production value in this than there is in the actual film.
The graphic designer really went all out on that one.
This, without a word of hyperbole, has got to be one of the cheapest looking movies I've ever seen in my life. Like I said, I mean, Chris, I mean, I said this to you before. I mean, we bought this movie, you took it home, you watched it, you were texting me going, what you can describe is this?
Yeah.
And then you gave it to me and said, okay, you gotta watch this thing. I was not prepared for this, man. I thought, okay, it's gonna be a lousy action film. I did not expect to get the action, i.e. thriller version of Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's how bad this thing is. It defies description. It's completely inept. It's cheap. It's terrible.
It's an espionage spy thriller with very little spying, very little espionage, and no thrills.
It's an action movie with no action.
Yeah.
The mise en scene is like Mexican soap opera.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Now you will have to forgive us because the plot is rather convoluted, and we will try to make heads or tails of it. But let's give it a go.
Bo Svenson, who he's been in, I guess, Inglourious Basterds,
the original Inglourious Basterds, and the Tarantino version, and he was also in Delta Force, and he was in the Walking Tall sequels, Walking Tall 2 and 3, and no, it was not Walking Taller, Walking Tallest.
Tallest.
he's even in Kill Bill Volume 2.
Been in tons of great movies.
Yeah, Bo Svenson is great.
And he plays an outgoing CIA intelligence operative who's, you know, he's pushing, you know, septuagenarian. He's ready to be put out to pasture. Mm-hmm. And he just wants to, you know, go and fish and lead a life peaceful, you know, contemplation.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as happens normally when you're outgoing from a job, you meet your successor.
Yeah.
And there's usually a very cordial sort of, you know,
passing of the baton. Yeah.
But not so in this one.
No.
First of all, we got to talk about The Office.
Oh, the office looked like a condo lobby, like super cheap. Like, this is supposed to be CIA headquarters, like state of the art.
Yeah.
This couldn't look cheaper. It was unbelievable.
With
this 2-bit map behind the guy, it looked like some National Geographic insert. You know?
Yeah.
like crummy phones, like the phones, even when they were using them, were like greasy. Like, you know, the mise-en-scene, just like complete, you know, pièce de merde.
Yeah.
Just,
So we got Jack talking with his brother.
His successor, yeah.
Well, he's talking with his rather attractive
assistant, yeah.
Kind of a, you know, a good-looking young brunette who gives him a going-away gift of a cell phone. And she goes, yeah. Oh, this is the latest and greatest.
And this is a late 90s movie. So,
yeah, you know. It's actually, I think it was 2000. So, mm-hmm. And Jack is, oh, I can never forget how to use one of these. Well, ladies and gentlemen, keep that in your mind.
Yeah,
much later.
Yeah.
And then we meet Jack's successor, and yeah. This is Mr. Grunier.
Yeah,
Grunier,
the kickboxer, and this guy.
And he plays a number cruncher.
Yeah, he's supposed to come in and take over this high-level intelligence operative role. And not only is he not versed in anything related to espionage whatsoever, he has like an MBA or a business background. Also, he's Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So well, like, yeah, where they're the American government is outsourcing their intelligence to foreign nationals.
Well, I should say
Bo Svensson is Swedish as
right,
well. So
exactly,
he could not be like less American if he tried.
Well,
so,
you know, I guess they want to explain away his extremely pronounced French accent by saying he's Canadian.
He's Canadian,
but,
yeah.
I mean, this King of the Guard could not have been more hostile.
Yeah.
I mean,
passive aggressive.
Poor Svensson, or Jack Thorne is his character's name.
Yeah.
He gets there's about 10 minutes of him being like just berated by Grunier.
He's a Purple Heart decorated Vietnam vet, and his successor comes in and says, you know old man, you know, kids these days, they go back maybe to Korea, they don't know anything
before the Gulf War.
Yeah, so you're Vietnam, nobody cares.
9 out of 10 kids can't even pick Vietnam on a map. And then you go, nationalism, I can't do a French accent, you can't share. Nationalism is out, globalization
is in, naturalism is out.
That's terrible. And he's basically telling his poor friends, and just like, you know, like, you know, don't let the door
crack
you on the way out. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty, I have to say, I felt pretty embarrassed for poor Bo at that point.
Yeah.
We find out that this is our top build, Olivia Grunier. I can't pronounce his name.
Yeah, Grunier.
So again, forgive me, but he is a money man. He's an accountant. He's a number cruncher.
That's his forte. Yeah,
and he's also the villain of the piece, which we'll find out in a bit. So Jack.
Jack is, he's free to lead a life of relaxation. Mm-hmm. So he retires to, might be Maryland, somewhere near,
or
Virginia, somewhere near Washington, D.C. So he goes fishing, and we got to say at this point, this is the most ridiculous swamp bog creek. That he's like casting his line into like 10 feet of you know, like just stagnant, swamp water.
And, Bo Svensson, he might be in his advanced age at this point, but he's still a formidable presence,
he's a big guy.
And the sight of him in these, what do you call those things, those waiters or whatever, and going, here?
Yeah, hip waiters in the middle of this, yeah.
And then there's this ridiculous song on
the
soundtrack.
This cesspool that he's, like, wading into.
Going, and I got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I found out this is a fishing song by Jim Woodyard, so, I mean...
Yeah, it sounds vaguely Johnny Cash-esque, but it's a jaunty tune, and it's the soundtrack to his golden years, his retirement years. But things aren't going too swimmingly for him, because this part I don't quite get, but someone was sent out to assassinate him.
Okay, so now we're going to get into convoluted territory, because at the beginning of the movie, there was a theft of a nuclear warhead.
Yeah.
And this, of course, led to some sort of blame being put on the outgoing CIA
I guess they
operative.
Figure it was an inside job, because he would have been privy to the intel as to where this warhead was going. But again, this is very convoluted stuff, so we're just assuming that's the case. Why they would want him dead is another question, but somebody wanted him dead while he's fishing. As we said, the cell phone will come into prominence, but he cannot use his cell phone. So when his executive assistant is trying to contact him, he's frustrated with his cell phone. I think at one point he pitches it into the water. Yeah, or he throws it into the woods, something to that effect.
But and he does retrieve it later
he
on.
He retrieves it, yeah. And so she sees that something is amiss. She cannot contact him, so she gets worried.
Uh-huh.
She goes out to Virginia, to the woods, and she uses a satellite tracker, this high-level, you know, CIA stuff to track him down. She arrives just in the nick of time to prevent
an assassination
attempt. And I guess she takes out the gunman and...
Or something or other. He gets hooked.
Yeah, and Svensson hooks the assailant with his reel and reels him in. Mm. And the guy is hooked by the lip.
Yeah.
And he gets the...
Yeah, which leads us to the next scene. I don't even know where the assistant, I guess she flew back to Maryland or whatever, you know?
Yeah, who knows where.
Whatever, but... So we have this would-be assassin, and he's bound to a chair, and he's gagged, and...
Yeah, and he's got a fishing lure in his mouth, and he's bleeding, which is kind of disgusting.
Well,
kind of
not really, because as I was saying to you before, the blood, it looked like when, you know, you go to the dollar store in October, and you buy the cheap blood, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the extent of the blood in the entire movie.
Yeah.
It was awfully cheap, but anyhow.
There's something a little like if you've ever gone fishing and got a lure caught in your forearm or your one of your fingers, it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit off-putting.
But... I've never gone fishing, so.
Oh, okay. And so yeah, this guy Svensson. Now that you know, again the Cold War is over, he somehow has made acquaintances and friends in the espionage spy community with a bunch of. You know, Eastern Bloc Cold War types, and they suddenly emerge here. I don't know how they, like, did he phone them all? I don't know. Why were they there?
He doesn't even know how to use a cell phone. He's living in a cabin off the grid, but somehow he manages.
Yeah. These are the most ridiculous, you know, crew you can imagine.
So all of a sudden, now this is going to be turning into a geriatric version of The Expendables, because we got the first operative we see is a Cuban, complete stereotype, you know, chomping on the cigar.
He's got the stogie. He's got, you know, terrible accent.
And he... Yeah, exactly. I mean, he could not have been less Cuban.
He just looks like some Italian dude from New Jersey.
Well, the actor playing his name is Leo Rossi. And,
he's got to be some Italian-American.
Yeah. And so we have the Cuban, we have the Russian.
Mm-hmm. Who looked like Lennon. He had the same pointy goatee.
Mm-hmm. Not John Lennon, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this some guy of you know, ambiguous ethnicity.
Well, yeah, because then we also had the German.
Yeah,
and then we had this guy, and we're trying to figure out what is his ethnicity.
Yeah,
all I can say is he was an absolute dead ringer yet again. I talked about Fulci in the last podcast. He looked like Lucio Fulci.
Yeah,
it was uncanny. But anyway. They get together and it's like the Golden Girls, but it's, you know,
ex spies, and they're obviously, you know, well versed in you know, extricating confessions from people. So they have this guy, and you know, strung up by the mouth with a fishing lure, and he's tied to a chair, and all these guys, you know, with their long years of, you know, KGB, in the case of one guy, their training, they know how to get information from people. So they inject this poor guy with drugs.
It's interesting because, you know, Svensson sort of like says, okay, guys, you do it. He kind of extricates himself from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
He lets them go at it, and they're just talking about, you know,
how they're going to torture him, and they're taking quite a lot of glee from how they're going to do this.
And
they're disagreeing with one another. Oh, yeah, you don't need drugs. You can get electrodes, attach it to his balls, you know, whatever. Yeah.
And at one point, he goes, you can't do this. I'm an American. I have rights. And the Cuban goes, yeah, you have rights. You also have Home Depot. Non sequitur. I have no idea what that meant.
I'm only guessing that he's referring to some household appliance that he was going to torture him with. But that lost me too. Home Depot. You know.
And speaking of non sequiturs, I mean, they pile up fast and furious because before you know it, they're on a plane, and this is
I guess we should say that there is a. G7 meeting that's taking place in Germany, and G7, of course, is the meeting of the richest industrialized nations. And at this meeting, there's a plot to detonate a nuclear warhead, which was stolen, I guess, in the first scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys have had this plot pinned on them because, you know, the Bo Svensson character, Jack Thorne. He was seen as having been privy to this intel of where you get the warhead. So they have to fly to Germany and intercept the use of this warhead, thereby saving all the lives of the G7 dignitaries and exonerating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we get
and
to this.
Preventing imminent worldwide financial collapse by some other convoluted plot that Gruner was trying to. I can't even figure this one out. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I guess he's involved in. Gruner is involved in some investments and gold and currency investments. And
gold.
When. I like gold. Yeah. And then when. At the prospect of a G7 meeting being bombed would send the markets into turmoil, and he's shorted the markets, so he can profit from this thing. Again, this is just speculation. This is very convoluted.
Yeah.
But this crew decides, puts it on them upon themselves to go out to Germany and thwart this attack, save these dignitaries, and they, of course, can't just fly by conventional aircraft.
Yeah.
They commandeer the world's cheapest airplane. One of them's a pilot, and yeah, this thing is unbelievably cheap. It looks like, as we said before, maybe the lobby of a newly constructed condo.
Looks like the same set as a van that we saw earlier, a military van, as the CIA office headquarters.
Yeah, just this gray, just
Oh my lord! And then they're flying over this
cinder block gray, nondescript. Looks like, the inside of a truck or God knows what.
And they're flying over this body of water, which could not be more fake looking. I've never in my life seen anything rendered that poorly.
In CGI, yeah.
A three-year-old could draw a picture that's a little more realistic than that.
Yeah, they couldn't get just stock footage of ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're just, for the Atlantic, but...
And then Svensson is on the plane wearing his old man reading glasses, and he's reading the cell phone manual, which is good.
Yeah.
Because, most action heroes, they pack, M16s or M18s or whatever.
And he takes great delight in figuring out how to make a cell phone call.
Yeah.
He calls his executive assistant back in Washington, D.C., and she's impressed that he's available, and he can master this technology.
Yeah, so, Dirty Harry had his 44, and Jack Thorne has a cell phone manual. So, they're not that different, are they?
No. So they land in Germany, and this is where this thing takes a left turn. This is the most absurd. One of the most absurd moments we've ever encountered.
Left turn after another left turn. Versus
they've almost come full circle with their turns.
Indeed,
they, of course, they need to grab weapons here because they got to forward their mission. They, one of the members has
the German.
The might be an East German. Yeah, mm-hmm, I guess he's got this operation in the middle of the woods that is involved in the manufacturing of porcelain gnomes.
Yeah.
Gnomes. And this is a front, money laundering front, I assume. A place to store his cache of weapons.
Yeah.
He's got AKs, he's got tons of handguns, he's got everything.
But it's also a violation of every child labor law known to man, because he's got
12-year-old kids working for him, manufacturing gnomes.
He's got 30 kids between the ages of 7 and 12 painting these disturbing-looking lawn gnomes. I don't like gnomes, man. They freak me out. And these gnomes... And then there's this five-minute scene of just shaking these kids' hands.
It's
very disturbing and very what the fuck.
Like, very, very odd.
Very, very weird. Very bizarre. But these gnomes, You gotta do something. If you have to, transport explosives. And again, why did they want to transport explosives?
They're trying to break into this G7 meeting, and so they hatch a plot.
They might as well have hatched an egg, because I was lost. But anyway, continue on.
No. They hatch this plot to infiltrate the G7 meeting in Germany and get to this nuclear warhead and dismantle it before it has a chance to go off and blow up the dignitaries. So their plot is to hide plastic explosives inside the gnomes, pretend their delivery men deliver the gnomes to the G7 summit.
Because no G7 summit is complete without gnomes.
is the world's crappiest G7 summit. Like, we were discussing virus, where there was a UN meeting in the same, in that movie as well. And that was the most poorly attended UN conference ever, because there was all of five journalists who attended this thing. Right. It was in the middle of the woods. This thing, there are no dignitaries there. I guess they're prepping for it. So they come in dressed, you know, as gnome delivery men. And the one guy, you said he's supposed to be East German.
Yeah.
But this, he doesn't...
They can't speak a lick of German.
No, they don't. And so they mime and gesticulate.
Gesticulate,
You know, they say, oh, this is toys, this is, you know, oh, fun, you know. Like,
Kinder.
Kinder, yeah.
Farfadugan.
Yeah. And then it turns out that, oh, they say, you know, that this is meant to be a gift for the Japanese emissaries, the Japanese diplomats who are going to go there. So this lax security lets in these gnome delivery men who can't speak German. Sure, come right in. But... yeah, things are not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver Grunier is on hand, and he captures Bo Svensson. Mm-hmm. The other guys are—I guess they're all captured at a certain point. Yeah, they're all captured.
Yeah.
As they get to the nuclear warhead, they're just about to dismantle it, and they get caught by the guards.
Mm.
And Bo Svensson is captured by Olivier Grunet. Mon Dieu. And he is thrown. If I'm not mistaken, he had his girl with him. I don't know how she showed up. And so they're thrown into this room.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a door lock. And he, again, the cell phone.
He's got his trusty manual.
Yeah, he manages to number generate a sequence of numbers that enables him to break free from this imprisonment.
Yeah, yeah.
And he and this hot chick assistant break out, and he manages to help out his buddies.
Right.
Break free as well.
Okay, it should be said, I mean, before he manages to help out his buddies, him and Gruner.
Grunet, have a
fisticuffs. But I mean,
yeah, we're going to say Olivier Grunet is a kickboxing champion.
This man, first of all, he's not
30 years Bo Svensson Jr.
Right. He gets his ass handed to him. Dude does not even throw one kick.
No,
okay?
No. Yeah.
I think he throws his one half-hearted, like, you know, right, left hook, and that's not the end of that. He just gets destroyed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we're looking at this box art again. It looks like this is like this Oliver Grunier, Cracker Jack 3. He is your hero. He's got his arms. He's going to kick some ass. The guy doesn't even throw a kick. He's a kickboxing champion.
Yeah.
This would be like having Tony Jaa in the movie
singing
My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever, you know? I don't know, man. I'm lost for words.
Really, really wild. Just incredible. And of course, these ex, you know, Eastern Bloc ops, they, you know, spoiler alert, they managed to blow up this warhead and save numerous lives, and it causes a, you know, rather large explosion at this 18th century Habsburg palace in the middle of the Black Forest, which looks incredibly cheap.
Oh my God,
the
fake
explosions in this thing are unbelievably fake, like bad fireworks territory.
At one point, the Fulci looking guy throws a grenade, and I swear, it reminded me of the old Batman 66 series where they throw, like, you know, a smoke bomb, because all it did was, like, sting a few eyes, and, you know, like, there was no damage whatsoever. I've seen Roman candle fireworks with more firepower than this grenade.
But this thing is just incredibly odd, incredibly, like, charming. And on our scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being a must-miss, 5 being a must-see, I would almost... I'm going to give this 3.75. Because this is, without question, this is the worst political thriller, I think, ever. So, you know, Jason Bourne, James Bond, you're still safe. This thing is pretty much dull as hell, with incredibly odd, terrible accented banter. And these guys are enjoying themselves immensely. They're all clearly sadists, because they're, like, gleefully discussing ways of torturing, people who have been, you know, captives.
But you do get a sense that these Sipitarian actors, you know, Svensson and Rossi and the like, I mean, they're enjoying.
Yeah, this, they're enjoying themselves, if not
the roles. Yeah, I mean, even if
they're not entertaining us,
complete cuckoo. I mean, they're having fun with it. So I mean, hey, you know, so you're giving this 3.75, eh?
Yeah, incredibly enjoyable and in a way oddly charming.
Well,
and
yeah. I mean, again, like, this is, like, you know, room-esque, like I said before. Yeah. And, you know, this is where it's at. I mean, you know, one is a must-miss, five is a must-see. I mean, when it comes to awful movies, if you, you know, many people say, oh, I'm an aficionado of awful movies. I've seen Birdemic, I've seen The Room, I've seen Manos, Hands of Fate, which
yeah,
might be,
we're going to be discussing shortly. Yeah,
in a future podcast, mm-hmm. perhaps. But, honestly, like, you have not seen the worst of the worst until you've seen Cracker Jack 3.
Yeah. And Cracker Jack 3 has nothing to do with its progenitors. There's Cracker Jack 1, which had Christopher Plummer. Cracker Jack 2 had
Judge Reinhold. One of my favorite 80s actors.
Yeah, and that was a train heist movie, and he was an action hero. Yeah,
yeah. So this is I don't know why they just couldn't call this one, you know, Jack Thorne's, you know...
Oh, I guess, yeah, there was a double entendre there, so he is the Jack in question of the Cracker Jack.
Well, there you go, yeah. Wow. So, okay.
Well, that's what I learned, then. Okay. What did you learn?
Well, I haven't given my rating yet.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, so I'm going to have to say that, like, this is so bizarre, because, I mean, if I was to rate this, like, as a proper critic, I would have to say this is a half
a star. Zero star, yeah.
But, I mean, for, you know, like, as far as... an entertaining, awful movie. This is a 3.5 star mm-hmm. flick. This is something unique, man. And I want to seek out Cracker Jack 1 and 2.
Yeah, me too.
What did I learn, man? I learned that
the United States does not hire Americans for high-level intelligence work. They hire aging Swedes and French kickboxers.
Right. Who they then pass off as French Canadian. Yeah.
And one of whom is almost completely indecipherable like for, you know, large swaths of dialogue spoken by Olivier Grunet.
Yep.
Completely unable to understand any of it.
Yep. And speaking of Grunier, whatever the heck his name is, I learned that, again, like, you know, you hire... a world champion kickboxer to appear in your movie, but there's no need to have him kickbox.
No.
I mean, you know, you don't need to have anybody, you know, to utilize anybody's skill set, because why? I mean, why should you, right?
Yeah, they were basically, I mean, obviously filming this thing in Europe.
Yeah,
he happened to be nearby. Yeah. They could probably only get so many Americans there to qualify for this thing. And
if you're putting on a concert, you know, hire Pavarotti and tell him, no, don't sing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Have him MC, whatever.
Exactly, there you go. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what I learned again is that, I can't even say what I learned. But what I will say is, yet again, sometimes you just got to grab that movie.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Sometimes you get burned.
Mm-hmm.
Other times you do get burned, but in a very good way.
Yeah, for sure.
This was a good burning. I enjoyed this one.
For sure.
So, Cracker Jack 3 is Cracker Jack in my book.
For sure.
Yeah.
And for more, check out our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.